Good morning. Do please find a Bible. There should be one in the pew or in the blue chair somewhere near you. And we're in 1 Corinthians, and today it's chapter 10. So in the church Bibles, that's page 1151. This chapter comes at the end of three chapters that are all sort of on the same thing, all following the same theme. All answering really one question that the church in Corinth had asked the Apostle Paul. The question had been, food sacrificed to idols, it's all right for us to eat, isn't it? As Christians, there's that sense of freedom. We're able to do what we want to do, aren't we? And Paul has been using this to try and shape the Corinthian church's thinking, but also our thinking. How do we decide what to do? What filters are there? What factors ought we to think of when we decide whether something is right or wrong for us to do? How do we decide what to do? Paul's taken a long time to answer this question because he's built in lots of factors, lots of things that we ought to consider. He's used it as an opportunity to teach some theology, really. Some understanding of what it is to be a Christian. In chapter 8, he explained that idols were nothing. They're not real. There's only one God. And so he explained that any meat sacrificed to idols is just meat. But he also explained that the governing principle for deciding what to do was not based on whether it was your right, but based on what was good for other people. Chapter 9, he spent a long time showing that this is what he'd done. This is how he lived. He went without rights that he could have claimed. He did that for the sake of the gospel and for the sake of other people. So chapter 10 is the conclusion. Here's the sort of end, if you like, of this section. We're going to read it all the way through to chapter 11 and verse 1. Quite long. You ready? Verse 1, chapter 10. For I do not want you to be ignorant of the fact, brothers and sisters, that our ancestors were all under the cloud, and that they all passed through the sea. They were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. They all ate the same spiritual food and drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the spiritual rock that accompanied them. And that rock was Christ. Nevertheless, God was not pleased with most of them. Their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now these things occurred as examples to keep us from setting our hearts on evil, as they did. Do not be idolaters, as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and got up to indulge in revelry. We should not commit sexual immorality. Some of them did, and in one day 23,000 of them died. We should not test Christ, as some of them did, and were killed by snakes. And do not grumble, as some of them did, and were killed by the destroying angel. These things happened to them as examples, and were written down as warnings to us, on whom the culmination of the ages has come. So, if you think you are standing firm, be careful that you don't fall. No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can endure it. Therefore, my dear friends, flee from idolatry. I speak to sensible people. Judge for yourselves what I say. Is not the cup of thanksgiving for which we give thanks a participation in the blood of Christ? And is not the bread that we break a participation in the body of Christ? Because there is one loaf, we who are many are one body, for we all share the one loaf. Consider the people of Israel. Do not those who eat the sacrifices participate in the altar? Do I mean then that the food sacrificed to an idol is anything, or that an idol is anything? No, But the sacrifices of pagans are offered to demons, not to God. And I do not want you to be participants with demons. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons too. You cannot have a part in both the Lord's table and the table of demons. Are we trying to arouse the Lord's jealousy? Are we stronger than he? I have the right to do anything, you say. But not everything is beneficial. I have the right to do anything. But not everything is constructive. No one should seek their own good, but the good of others. Eat anything sold in the meat market without raising questions of conscience, for the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. If an unbeliever invites you to a meal and you want to go, eat whatever is put before you, without raising questions of conscience. But if someone says to you, this has been offered in sacrifice, then do not eat it, both for the sake of the one who told you and for the sake of conscience. I'm referring to the other person's conscience, not yours. For why is my freedom being judged by another's conscience? If I take part in the meal with thankfulness, why am I denounced because of something I thank God for? So, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Do not cause anyone to stumble, whether Jews, Greeks, or the Church of God, even as I try to please everyone in every way. For I am not seeking my own good, but the good of many, so that they may be saved. Follow my example, as I follow the example of Christ. How do we decide what we do? What filters, what factors ought to influence whether we do something or don't do something? I'm going to break this chapter into two parts and see two things that Paul is really sort of pressing home at the end here that ought to determine what we do or don't do. So, the first is this. Whatever you do, flee idolatry. Paul begins this chapter by holding up the example of the Israelites. The Israelites who came out of Egypt, but who succumbed to idolatry. So go back to the start of chapter 10 and we just follow through what Paul does. Now Paul is linking what the Israelites experienced and what they went through to us. He's saying there's big similarities between them and us. So he says this, verse 1, for I do not want you to be ignorant of the fact, brothers and sisters, that our ancestors were all under the cloud, the pillar of cloud that God used to guide them through the wilderness. They all followed it. And they all passed through the sea, the Red Sea, as God miraculously opened it up and they came through on dry land, rescued from Egypt. They all ate the same spiritual foods, the manna that God provided daily for them to eat, that they could go out and collect in the mornings each day. And they drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the rock that accompanied them, and that rock was Christ. Now that's a strange sentence, isn't it? The rest of it we understand. They followed the clouds, they went through the sea, they all did that. But then he speaks of a rock following them. Well, that's weird if that's literal. And then he says that that rock was Christ. And this is speaking about Moses right back at the start of the Bible. And we know that Jesus appears in the New Testament right at this end of the Bible. What's Paul saying? There's a little bit of help in Deuteronomy 32. Don't have a look at it now, but perhaps later on today. Have a look at Deuteronomy 32. Moses sings a song. The whole chapter is a song that's been written out for us. And throughout this song, God is referred to as a rock. He is our rock. We often use that phrase, don't we, even as Christians today. It's there throughout the Psalms. God is our rock. And throughout Deuteronomy 32, Moses is saying, God has led us through the wilderness. He has been our rock. God has supplied for us what we've needed. He has been our rock. God has been gracious to us. He has been our rock. So Paul, looking back at the Old Testament, looking back at Deuteronomy 32, I think, is making some connections. How is God gracious to us? Well, through Jesus. So he makes that leap, that jump. They drank from the same spiritual drink. They drank from the rock that accompanied them. And that rock was Christ. And what's he saying overall? Well, to all intents and purposes, the people back then all looked like the people of God. And us today, here sitting in church, we all look like the people of God. We're here in church. And we could use the same kind of symbolism, couldn't we? We've not come through the sea, but for many of us, we've been baptized, come through the waters. We've not eaten manna or drank water from a rock, but we feed on Christ in communion. We take bread and wine, spiritual food. We all look like the people of God. We enjoy the blessings of being his people. We recognize that he's graciously provided for us. But look at what Paul says about that generation, verse 5. Nevertheless, God was not pleased with most of them. Their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. They didn't make it to the promised land. They died in the desert. They faced God's judgment. They looked like the people of God. They had the blessings of God. But they ended up judged by God. And look at what Paul says next, verse 6. Now these things occurred, these things that we can read about in Exodus and in the book of Numbers at the beginning of the Bible. These things occurred as examples to keep us from setting our hearts on evil things as they did. And then verse 11, these things happened to them as examples and were written down as warnings for us. That's just a helpful thing to remember when we read the Old Testament. What are we reading? Yes, they're stories. They're stories of real events that happen to real people. But why are they in our Bibles? Well, Paul says one of the reasons is so that we can look and learn. We can see what happened to them and make sure it doesn't happen to us. We can look at what they did and avoid it. Don't be like them. Now, we use the same kind of tactic all the time, don't we, to stop us doing certain things. We've seen it with smoking over the last, 10, 15 years. What's written on every cigarette packet now? Smoking kills. It's there as a warning. Warning. Don't be like them. Don't bow down to idols. It will kill you. So Paul starts to list off some of the things they did. And we could, if we had time, we'd go back to the Old Testament and read of some of these things that they got up to. Do not be idolaters, as some of them were. We should not commit sexual immorality, as some of them did. We should not test Christ, as some of them did. Test God. We should not grumble, as some of them did. Because in each of these situations, the consequence was death. Judgment, destruction, even grumbling. That's surprising, isn't it? Grumbling. You a grumbler? God takes grumbling really seriously. Grumbling in that it's an ingratitude to God's provision, what he has done for you. Be wary, especially as you get older. Tendency to become a grumpy old man. Grumpy old woman. Ingratitude. Now, I think there's a sense when we read the Old Testament, we read of the Israelites and we see what they got up to. A bit like when we read about the disciples in the New Testament, we look at it and we think, God, they were really stupid, weren't they? How could they have done such things? They'd seen God at work. They'd seen the miracles that he did. You know, they'd come through the Red Sea and it had been parted and he saved them in those dramatic ways. They'd been at Sinai and God had given them the law. And within a few weeks, they were bowing down to a golden calf. How stupid. How stupid that the Israelites could have fallen for the oldest trick of the book, that the honey trap, the sexual immorality, when these women from a neighboring nation were sent in to trick them and trap them and lead them into idolatry, and they fell for it. How could they do that? Well, Paul is saying, they're just like you. We can easily do these things. And here's the thing, verse 12. If you think this is beyond you, if you think you could never fall in that way, be careful, verse 12. Be careful that you don't fall. There's wonderful balance in the Bible, I think. We've sung that, one of my favourite songs at the moment, He Will Hold Me Fast. When I fear my faith will fail, if I'm anxious about my status before Christ, He will hold me fast as an assurance. That's a good position to be in. If I get too confident as a Christian, if I think I'm okay, I'm doing well, I'm living a good life, you know, I don't really need to sing that song, we're in danger. Be careful that you don't fall. Don't think these temptations won't come your way. The temptation to idolatry, the temptation to sexual immorality, the temptation to test Christ or grumble against God. Don't think you're not liable to fall. You will be tempted, but God will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear, says Paul. And when you are tempted, He will also provide a way out so that you can endure it. It's in verse 13. Now, when you go on a plane, what's the first thing they tell you on a plane? Here's the emergency exits. Here's the way out. And Paul says we need to have the same idea, the same thinking as a Christian. We need to know, particularly in terms of temptations, what's our way out? Where's the emergency exit? There'll always be one. When we're tempted, there's always an emergency exit. Will you take it? Will you leave? Will you flee? Will you run for it? That's the encouragement here, isn't it? Therefore, verse 14, my dear friends, flee from idolatry. Don't dabble, don't flirt with it. Don't think you're strong enough. Run, run away, run like the wind. Flee. Because idolatry will kill you. Well, Paul pushes further with this idea that idolatry is a bad thing. Sort of write something fairly complimentary next, verse 15, I speak to sensible people. Is that true this morning? You consider yourself sensible? Sort of follow logic. Here's the logic, says Paul. You take communion. We're going to do that this evening. Take the bread and the cup. He says when you do that, you participate in Christ. Not that the bread and the wine literally turn into the body and the blood of Christ, but you're participating in Him. You're associating yourself with Him in what He did. And so if you participate in idol worship, if you eat that meat sacrificed to idols, you're participating in something which is false worship. Something which could take you away from worshipping the true God, the living God. And therefore, it's not neutral. Who doesn't want you to worship God? Well, Satan. Who's behind all idols? Well, demons, says Paul. And so, there's a logic, verse 21. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons too. You cannot have a part in both the Lord's table and the table of demons. Why? Well, again, look at the warning. Are we trying to arouse the Lord's jealousy? Verse 22. Are we stronger than He? You dabble with idols, you'll stir the Lord's anger. Idolatry kills. Perhaps more what Paul is saying here, God kills because of idolatry. That's what happened to the Israelites, wasn't it? That's why they were scattered in the wilderness. They died because God had killed them. You get involved in idols, you head away from God and start worshipping something else, God will kill you. This is strong stuff, isn't it? So when you're deciding what to do, should I do this, shouldn't I do this? Is there a danger that I'm going to be led down a path of idolatry, worshipping something instead of God? Now, remember a couple of weeks ago, we tried to think, what are some of our idols? We haven't got literal idols like they had in Corinth. There were temples around the city. You could see them everywhere. Lots of different idols that you might go and worship. We don't have that in Cheam. But we tried to think through in Cheam Village, well, what is there? What idols are there that we might start to worship? They're much more subtle. But we had to think about what is in literally in Cheam Village. What are there lots of? That gives us an idea of the things that people's hearts go after. Remember, an idol is a good thing that becomes a God thing. An idol is a good thing that you start to place your sense of meaning in or your sense of salvation in. An idol is something that starts to dominate you, where you place your hopes or your future. And we tried to think, didn't we? What have we got a lot of in Cheam? Well, it's quite easy, isn't it, walking through Cheam Village? There's lots of hairdressers and beauty salons and barbers and places to get your beard trimmed and image. One of the idols around us is image. Being accepted by others, fitting in, looking good, staying young. When I'm deciding whether to do something or not do something, is there a danger that I'm going to fall down a path of idolatry, of being suckered into thinking too much about how my image matters? Well, this doesn't mean that we all stop going to the hairdressers in Cheam Village and they all go out of business. But it's an awareness, isn't it? Just as Paul says, you might eat the meat sacrificed to idols, but are you aware of the dangers? Or do you just sort of go in blasé and, like we were thinking a couple of weeks ago, comment on Facebook about other people's looks all the time? Idolatry. What else is there in the village? Well, loads of coffee shops and restaurants. Food and pleasure and drink. Idol of, well, perhaps particularly pleasure, perhaps escapism. Now again, this doesn't mean that we never go to the American way ever again. Be a disaster if that closed down. But is this running through our minds? Are we just doing what everyone else does? Or is there an awareness that for some, this is a trap? This is what life is all about, just to have the finest food, to drink on a Friday night, to escape from the hardships of this life and just enjoy something. This is where my hopes are. It's what my life's about. It starts to dominate. It's an awareness. Looking through Cheam Village, what else is there? Well, estate agents, our homes. Again, it doesn't mean that we don't have a home. But that thinking, that thought process, is my home becoming an idol? Do I need to have this and that? Has it trapped me? Has it got me? Flee from idolatry, says Paul. It will kill you. Secondly, whatever you do, copy Christ. Second half is much more positive. The first half was negative. But Paul begins now to speak much more positively. Starts by quoting back again there one of their statement from Corinth. Verse 23, I have the right to do anything. This is one of the things they would say, and there was a sense of truth in it. As a Christian, you've got that freedom now. You have a right to do anything. But, says Paul, not everything is beneficial. Going to that hairdresser's, going to that restaurant, buying that house, is it beneficial to you? Or is it the beginnings of a trap, slippery slope? Will it lead you to being hooked? I have the right to do anything. But not everything is constructive, end of verse 23. Not everything builds up. Constructive, construction industry, building up. Remember, that's one of Paul's big themes. How do we build each other up? It's the other factor, the other filter when we decide whether we should do something. It's the impact on other people. It's not about me. Is this going to help build someone else up if I do this? No one should seek their own good, says Paul, but the good of others, verse 24. So he comes back to the whole question of should I eat food sacrificed to idols? Verse 25, first of all, you go to the meat market. Some of the food being sold at the meat market has been in the temple. It's been sacrificed to idols. The meat market was just outside the temple. Some of it hasn't been sacrificed to idols. You're not quite sure. It's not all labeled up properly. You go to the meat market, buy whatever meat you like. Eat it, verse 25, without raising questions of conscience. For the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. It all belongs to God. It's just meat. Freedom. And if an unbeliever invites you to a meal and you want to go, eat whatever is put before you without raising questions of conscience. This isn't talking about fussiness around the dinner table. Somebody invites you round for a meal. But it's that question of, are they giving me something which has been sacrificed to an idol? Do I need to consider this? And Paul is saying, well, no, if they invite you, you know, don't be rude, just accept the invite, go and eat. It's a good thing to do. But if someone says to you, perhaps they were sat next to you, perhaps it's your younger brother or sister, or just comes up in conversation, that nudge, hey, this food, that food they got, it's been offered in sacrifice. Again, it's Paul getting our attention on the other person. Is this going to make them stumble and fall? Are they going to think that it's going to be all right for them to eat? It's going to lead them into idolatry. Then don't eat it, he says. The overriding headline here is, whatever we do, whether you eat or drink, verse 31, or whatever, do it all for the glory of God. Do not cause anyone to stumble, whether Jews or Greeks or the church of God. Do it all for God's glory. In other words, whenever we decide to do something for the good of others rather than ourselves, God is glorified. That might be a helpful way to think this week. Whenever I do something for someone else's good, even when I would want to do the opposite, my own rights, I could do it, my own desires, I want to do it, but actually for the good of this person, I'm not going to. God is glorified in that. When we think of others first, God is glorified. Not only that, it can help with evangelism, he says. I'm not seeking my own good, but the good of many, so that they may be saved. And as I do this, says Paul, I'm following the example of Christ. So copy me, says Paul, as I copy Christ. What was Christ like? What did he do? All the rights in the world. He gave them all up. King of the world. Came to be the servant of all. How did he decide what to do? Well, he fled idolatry, never worshipped anything other than his Father God. And he always did things for the good of others. Always. Even going to a cross to die for you, for your sin. I wonder if we could say what Paul says in there, verse 1 of chapter 11. Could you say that honestly this morning? Eyeball the person next to you. Hey, this week, follow my example as I follow Christ. Could you say that? There's a sense in which none of us should dare say that, should we? The pride, the arrogance that we could fall into with that. But Paul's not being proud here. saying, this is literally what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to follow the Lord Jesus, how he lived. Therefore, copy me. So why do we do what we do? What do we need to think of in deciding what to do? Consider idolatry and flee it. What do you need to flee this week? What in the moment when you're tempted do you need to run away, turn off, switch conversation? Idolatry, sexual immorality, grumbling, flee. How do you need to better copy Christ this week? Who do you need to consider this week? Whose rights might you prefer this week?